people standing there. And I have seen them. Have you all been to Bus Up Tay when the buses are coming in, just to look and see how the story is? It's appalling. My vision is you get cold at my age, and everybody now, of course, knows how old I am because I've been told it's been in the paper. You get cold and wet and pneumonia and you die. It's very easy at my age to do that. And I have spoken to lots of people from overseas about what they think of Dunedin now because it's been allowed to carry on and happen. I've spoken to bus drivers who are furious about having to drop people there in all weathers. Mind you, I've also spoken to bus drivers who are just grumpy anyway and they don't want to talk. But I had the solution. Stop outside Centre City New World. There's a huge row of seats, there's veranda, there's phones inside for taxis, which I was dropped off there once coming back from Queenstown. Well, on a Queenstown bus, I should say. And it's so easy. You just get off the bus, pop in, get a taxi and go home. And through the supermarket, public toilets. So you couldn't ask for more than that. And almost anybody who's on a trip, either at the beginning or the end of a trip, would have something they want to buy in a supermarket. And it's all undercover and it's all there. So I thought I had almost solved the problem and then got stuck on Centre City. On Intercity. Sorry, it's so easy with my age to mix words up. I've had a concussion. So I spoke to somebody in Auckland who informed me that they were using that stop on the evening stops for Dunedin. So I decided to go and check and make sure. So I went to K, and of course they all came into Hub K, and the people were mad and wet and cold and all of the above, and have been for weeks and weeks. And then we got some shelter put in. And when I heard that it was going to be shelter, and I was thrilled. I was a bit dubious, but I was thrilled. And now there's enough shelter there for about 8 people, maybe, maximum. So obviously they're all going to sit on each other's knees and shelter, cuddle into each other while they wait in the wet weather. We can still change to Centre City New World. Nobody has said it's not allowed. They just keep listening and look blankly at me, and nobody ever responds to that. It wouldn't cost a penny to move there. It wouldn't cost anybody a penny, let alone the company. But you may be interested to know, earlier in the year, they started putting a $5 levy if you wanted to sit in the front row. Now, I always sit in the front row if it's possible because I like to see where I'm going. And I like to keep an eye on the bus driver and see what speed they're doing occasionally as well. Well, they're not. This one bus driver who reported me because when nobody sat in the front row, I thought, I'll sit in the front row because nobody's in the front row. And then I got reported because I hadn't paid the $5. Well, the $5 went up to $10. And then I spoke to a bus driver just a couple of days ago and it's gone back to $5. So I'm not quite sure what that actually means in reality, but I think the business is going down the tubes. Yes, can I help?
Yes, hi. I'm not actually from Dunedin. I live out of town. So just checking that the Hub K, which I think I've used before, is actually for inter-regional travel. So it's between here and...
And Christchurch, Invercargill, Queenstown.
So Otago Regional Council, as I understand it, doesn't manage those buses. They're a private company.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the attitude of people to Dunedin now after this business has been going on.
Ah, fascinating. Okay. What would you like us to do?
I'd put some... The only other thing I'd thought of was going to the Chamber of Commerce or somebody that had a business connection to the city.
Right. Yep.
But when I was also told that the mayor couldn't help because he had no connection. But surely, to goodness, he cares about what people think of Dunedin. Mm-hmm. And that's what's been driving me with this. I love Dunedin. I have 8 great-grandchildren, and I'm the only one of my family that lives here. Yes.
I'm to the chair.
I'll let you finish your presentation first, if that's all right. Is that it?
No. Well, it's never ending, really. But it's, yes. But, as you know, I've been on this since May, but sure.
I know, I think we get the thrust of your message. Councillor Scott.
Yeah, I think if there's been an issue, then we should apologise. But look, on this particular matter, the ORC and the DCC work relatively closely together, is my understanding. The DCC, as you've said, have put in this bus shelter relatively recently. If it's not fit for purpose, then that feedback needs to go back to them, you know, whether it makes sense to have another one beside it. I myself have waited for my son to come down from Canterbury, you know, on that spot. And actually, when it was raining and pouring, I just went across to the road where there's balconies right along the streetscape. So in the short term, maybe there's a solution for you. And in the
it's not
medium,
for me, it's for the people that are here.
Yeah, okay. And in the medium term, I think we should be discussing this matter with the city. My view.
Take this up as an individual.
Any further questions of inquiry?
Can I ask one question, please? Is Intercity the only interregional bus company that operates or uses that particular locale?
There is a smaller one. It's the only actual bus size. Atomic shuttles use it.
So Intercity and Atomic, are they the only two interregional bus services from Dunedin, are they?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
No Newmans, no Landliner, no All Their Good Days.
They're all
Bacon Bus.
They've all gone. Yeah.
Mm. And this one will go too if we're not careful.
I can understand why.
Thank you. On the bus point, I hope that one day there will be a publicly funded interregional bus system, and it may not be run by ORC, but we'll see. So back to your point, which is a really interesting one, about being the, you know, people's perception of the city, and that's a really important one. And I was just trying to clarify exactly what you hoped we could do. So we do, you know, have a mayoral forum, for example, that has representation from across Otago, but we also have relationships with Dunedin City Council. And the Chamber, they've come to talk to us. So what would be your message that you want us to take back and integrate into those conversations? I'm just trying to get to the crux of what you hope us to do from this meeting, because you've taken time to come down here, and that's important. So in terms of what you think that we need, better services for the community, which would reflect better on us as a city?
Well, originally this company used to have, there was a property just about a block from the railway was the last one they had, and then they went across to where they are now, where they were. But you've always gone into a building and kept out of the weather and waited for the bus to come. And then suddenly that wasn't happening, and you were just being tipped out in the street. And I've had the same thing, of course, on my trips. It's people, and we do have the media behind you there that have carried four or five articles about this in the paper, in the ODT.
Okay, so, it's a really good opportunity. We're about to have a conversation in a couple of weeks about the new national policy statement for productive land and urban development, and both of those highlight the need for New Zealanders to move away from cars. If we're going to move away from cars, we need to have a transport system that actually allows us to do that, which includes interregional travel. And on that basis, we need to ensure that the services and infrastructure for keeping people comfortable when they're travelling are in place. So I can completely see how what you're asking us to do fits into what we're doing here. And that conversation sounds like it needs to be had with Dunedin City Council. But also the bus companies, because they're not publicly owned, they're privately owned. So somehow that relationship needs to be built for better mobility.
And this is the conversation I've had since May.
Great, okay.
It's going to happen, and in the meantime, when it rains, just remember, every time it rains, there are people standing in the street getting saturated. One woman said to me, I had to go into my suitcase to get my warm coat out, it was so cold. She was from Melbourne, and there is an article, Jono had an article an interview with her about that. And then she said, so when the case was open, it got wet, and then I was saturated, and then I sat in the bus, wet, all the way to Invercargill. She'll be telling all her friends, don't go to Dunedin. I'm trying to save Dunedin's reputation. And every time I try and do something, I'm just told that, I'm sorry, it's not my job, it's somebody else's
it's
job.
It's so typical of Dunedin.
And it's every time it rains, somebody's going to, well, eventually somebody will die.
Sounds like we could make sure that if we were to invest in good infrastructure, we could save on health costs at the hospital.
Yes.
So let's look further up the line than that. So that's a really good point. Thank you.
And I know it'll take weeks and weeks and weeks. And in the meantime,
elderly
person will die. And remember, it is election time. And at my age, I have dozens and dozens of friends.
One last
so
question.
I just suggest that people remember that.
One last key question, Councillor Kempton.
Yeah, thank you very much. Anne-Marie, I just want to be clear on the specifics of your request. And my understanding is that you look at the Stop K, which Richie's or Intercity or whoever they are, the same people, they have decided to use that as opposed to their Halsey Street depot, which a lot of people didn't like anyway.
It also meant they lost staff.
Absolutely, but that was a decision of theirs to do that, and I suppose it's nice that they came up to town. But you're saying that a practical solution now would be to stop at New World.
Yeah.
Now, when a southbound bus comes, it has to go round a block. It's the same for K, presumably? Same as it is now? They'd have to go round the block?
They'd have to go round the block to carry on.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure that the drivers would be happy to do that because
right.
the drivers are upset because
so,
they are the ones that have to drop people into the rain.
So at the very least, you would be asking us to take a look at that and the opportunities and the issues associated with that stop against Stop K. Okay, thank you.
Yes. And well, the supermarket is thrilled with the idea.
One quick question.
Yeah, am I right in thinking, Mr. Chairman, that we are setting up a trial airport public transport service sometime in the next month or two?
Not tomorrow.
Is that right, Nick? Are we trialling a public passenger transport airport service?
That's in the long-term plan, but...
Yes.
Evans area, I don't know where that's at. That was always one of the initiatives of the LTP. Yep.
But it seems to me that two things come together.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If that's going to be successful, I think we've got to take seriously what Anne-Marie has been telling us.
Okay, we'll draw this to a close. So thank you very much, Anne-Marie. You've been quite clear in what you've...
It's not just me. There is a wonderful woman in Queenstown who's been travelling backwards and forwards too. She's in the city choir, and she has been trying desperately to get replies. Nobody ever returns her emails. Nobody ever replies to anything. So we're corresponding on that one.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
And tomorrow there'll be a change? If it rains tomorrow?
Change in the weather.
That's what I mean. So we don't care about our tourists from overseas. And yesterday I went down there and there were 7 people catching the bus. The driver said it's the lowest he's ever known, and there were no stops anywhere else in Dunedin, just 7 there. I couldn't help thinking that business is going to fail if we don't sort this out. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Staff will look at that. Okay, we'll move on. Next we have Port Otago. The first of our presentations today, the Otago Rescue Helicopter Trust are due at 1 o'clock, so it's a bit later on. So.
I'm driving.
Welcome, Dave. Welcome with your team back here. It's not so long since we had your last visit. We've also got Mr. Heslin down the back there somewhere.
Yep.
So welcome, Pat. We're in your hands, David.
Okay, well, first of all, kia ora, and nice to see you all again. And yeah, just for those that don't know, Pat is the chairman of the Audit Committee of Port Otago. I think he's well known to many of you, the older councillors around, or people who have been around for a while, in his involvement with ORC. So, yeah, just straight into it. Yeah, it's pleasing to be here again to report another good year for Port Otago, and which is all the ones I've reported on, I think, have been one better than the year before, so it's that's pleasing to report. So just looking up to the group highlights there, the after-tax profit is up $6 million from the previous year, really on the back of logs and cruise vessels. They were the cargoes that really showed an uplift, and you'll see a bit more in the detail of these when Kevin reports on that later on. also the sales at Te Rapa, the land sales have been continuing pretty well there, and the settlements that are coming through, they're certainly delivering to the bottom line as well. The next generation, certainly 10 years ago we were sitting around still getting consenting for next generation, so that's the channel deepening and the various other things associated with that. And really we can say now, other than the fishing wharf, which will be finished before summer, really the next generation has been completed. And that's a big milestone in terms of setting up Port Otago for the next 15 to 20 years to be able to cope with the demands of the various ships that are calling in. A real milestone, shareholder equity exceeding $500 million. So it was $508 million. And that started 20 million 30 years ago in 1989 when Port Otago was formed. There was 20 million of equity. So rising over 30 years to 508 million, that is a compound growth rate of 11.4% per year for 30 years. And as well as that, Port Otago has also produced 173 million of dividends for its shareholder, obviously the ORC. Just couple of brief comments. I think that reflects the shareholder input into Port Otago, first of all in just selecting the right directors. And I'd say that about all my other directors that I've worked with. There's been a very high standard of directors always being involved in Port Otago over those 30 years. And also just the reinvestment of retained earnings, which has allowed the business to actually have some money to grow, and to grow that capital value to the extent that I've just mentioned. So just in a bit more detail, the group financials, all those indicators really are 10% 10% or better up, except the revaluations. Revaluation seems to be hovering around that 20, 22 million year in, year out for the last number of years, and it's probably just going to continue. But that's still a very good number of that's the revaluations of our commercial land that we own. It's good, nice to see port operations showing a bit of an uplift, and the investment properties that's up. It is up a little bit because of some of the gains on land we've sold in the Dunedin area. So we're aware that we've been selling some ground lease land there, and there's been a bit of uplift in there, so that's what's driven that increase a little bit also. Just, where the dollars are coming from. So you can see there's, just a trend upwards in the port operations. Investment property, it's pretty consistent but growing. And the red bits on the top is the contribution coming out of Te Rapa. So that will be all over in the next 2 to 3 years. We'll come on to that, and I'll show you just how little we've got left to sell really there. But that really has been, there's been a good contribution, but it is a one-off that with an end in sight. Returns on equity, still looking pretty good, and that line going up. Equity's going up, but we're still managing to maintain a reasonable return on equity at 10.1%. And the balance sheet strength, it's really picked up a bit this year. And one of the contributors to that is that as we're selling off land, there is a good amount of cash flowing out of that. We've invested cash, A, in buying the land, B, in developing it. So when we sell it, as well as the profits reported, we are getting the cash back. and that is a big driver of that lesser debt position shown there. I also might add...
Can I just ask one clarification? The bank debt, is that through the whole Port of Otago group?
Correct.
Thank you very much.
I just might add that we had on the last day of June, there was $20 million came in on the last day of June as a settlement on land, which, you know, drives that down quite, you know, probably a little bit artificially, but it was accounted. So that accounted for quite a big drop of the debt position on the 30th of June. But that aside, the balance sheet is still in very good position, and the equity going up, again, that's a little bit driven by that $20 million being dropped into the bank on the last day of the financial year. Just looking a bit at the capital expenditure, a lot of this, as I said, has been related to new generation, and a big part of new generation was the dredging of the channel. Arahi expenditure, Takutai, there was certainly items or tools that allowed us to do that in-house at significantly lesser price than getting someone to come from Holland or wherever to do that dredging. The multi-purpose wharf is a big chunk there, which is just completed. The TR Healy was a barge that we bought to work with Takutai, and that's out on a daily basis. That first slide we had up when we came in, it showed all our dredging fleet all working together out on the channel. Unfortunately, in a port business, capital expenditure doesn't. You have a few peaks, but it does continue, and while we're finished next generation, possible deepening further of the upper harbour, we're looking at doing that. We're going down at the moment to 8.5 metres, which we can do under the present consent, and that does allow some shipping to coming up to the upper harbour to be a little bit deeper. But again, we're going through the exercise of whether we should be going further with that. We do need to widen the maiden channel a bit, just with the size of ships coming in, particularly the bigger cruise vessels. They just need a wee bit more room, turning space, just to improve the navigational abilities in that area. Straddle replacements, we do at least, you know, really we're doing two of those probably a year, or two over 18 months, three or whatever it is, but they are pretty chunky items that we do need to keep up to date with. And also just general plant maintenance. Replacement. We've got a lot of plant going around, and just keeping that up to date is also pretty important. So yes, there is some ongoing capital expenditure to keep the business going. Just the dividends paid, and you can see there just the blue is a very slight increase. The couple of years of special dividends, which has been added on, and that's really aimed at, and I think over the certainly my involvement and even earlier, that really the dividend flows, the main aim is to be providing consistent dividends and not ups and downs that you might get in sort of other companies if we were just driven by a number related to profitability. So what I'd like to do now, just pass over to Kevin to flesh out a little bit of just how we've derived the results I've just referred to.
Good morning. If we just take the activity, so you'll see there that we've got the container businesses. We've still got four services calling Port Chalmers, so you should really have four times 52. So that's relatively stable. You can see the yellow there reflecting the increase in bulk vessels, which has been driven by cargo, being the logs, which has been really good. And on the top there, you've got the cruise activity starting to kick in. So we're around about 573 vessel movements for the year, which is up about 30, which is great. And that doesn't count our Fiordland piloting, where we've got around about 77 vessels that we pilot around in Fiordland. So a good level of activity, which drives the business. But the highlight for us is obviously the growing cruise business. And you can see there that we've had a significant increase in both Dunedin and Port Chalmers, from 87 through to 115 ships visiting. Which is fantastic. The Fiordland piloting is up to 77 of the vessels going through Fiordland, taking through to the passenger numbers. That doesn't include the crews coming off the vessels, so the number's a lot larger than that. We've got 238,000 visitors coming through Dunedin, and Stats do a great job now tracking credit cards and spend on individual passengers, because they've got the manifesto and they've got a really smart system. So it's not an economic high-level analysis, it's real-time data. So that $60 million is a real good, accurate spend, which is fantastic for Dunedin. So it's a growing piece of our business, and as Dave talked about, the multi-purpose wharf extension has been vital in driving that growth. So it's great to see that investment starting to pay dividends. And more to come. You can see our bulk business, and this is a mixture of Port Chalmers and Dunedin Bulk Port. You can see it's dominated by the log trade at 65% of the volume. Fuel was pretty flat. Fertilizer was down a little bit, but not much. And in the other, you've got LPG and you've got cement, but they were down a little, and the promising upward movement was fishing was on the up this year. So that's starting to grow again, which is great for us. So overall, a really positive result in the bulk business in both Dunedin Bulk Port. And the log increase was driven by investment. The previous year, we spent nearly $1 million on upgrading the Dunedin Bulk Port logging yard and taking the Icon Transport business off it. And you can see that uplift as our forest customers have been able to use that additional space. So we've got more throughput through the port, which is great. The container business has been a bit of a tough business, this one. The container guys around the world are struggling. Global trade's tough, and there's obviously tariff issues between China and US. And the shipping guys are not making any money. So if you average the entire shipping industry for the last 4 years, they've made zero. So it's a pretty tough time. So at the moment, they're all looking at their networks, how they can save cost. They're pretty hard and challenging conversations they're having with most ports. And it means that the year we've just had, there's been a lot of changes in the network. So you can see there that our transship numbers at the bottom there are up significantly. And this is cargo being transshipped from Timaru down to Port Chalmers, then up to China. But that was for about 6 months of the year, and then it was stopped. So it's a bit start-stop for us. And that business, whether we'll get it this year, is still undetermined. So we're expecting our container numbers to be down for the year ahead. So it's a bit of a challenging business for us at the moment, but still a core element of our offering. So as developments, a lot of work going on during the year, and we've had a huge work program, and this is a bit busy, but effectively our critical risk management is looking at the health and safety moments that could seriously hurt someone or kill someone is the way to look at it. So we're not focused on trips and slips, we're focused on someone getting tipped up a straddle and dying as a result, like the young boy in Auckland pre-Christmas. And we had a straddle event in 2016-17 with Anton tipping up one of our straddles, and effectively he survived, which is very rare. So this approach looks at the, in this case we'll say driver fatigue in the middle there, and on the left-hand side you look at all the things in your business that could trigger that. And it could be driver fatigue, could be not enough sleep, so it's a rostering issue. It could be they're impaired because they've taken drugs. Could be they're not trained very well. So you go through all those steps on the left-hand side, and all the little boxes are all the mitigants you have. So if you take training, you've got them trained, you do refresher training, so you make sure all of that activity's there to avoid that someone gets in a straddle that doesn't know how to drive one. And if you take drugs, we've unfortunately had five of our workers test positive for meth in the last 3 months. So that's people coming to work driving heavy 60-tonne machinery on meth. So you look at the mitigants why someone would be impaired at the helm of a straddle, $2 million straddle, would be the pre-employment drug test. You'd be looking at education around drugs. You'd be looking at what our random testing programs are to make sure that someone doesn't get in that position where they're driving a straddle impaired. So that whole left-hand side's all about that. And the right-hand side is the way to look at it is when you have an event, what are you doing? So that it could be, where's your defibrillator? So there's, in case of an event, where's your emergency services? Where are your first aiders? How are you dealing with that? Where's the environmental response? So it's quite an easy way for our team to get together, and we have big workshops. And we focus on the left-hand side first, get all the teams together, and then work out the left-hand side and then work out our response on the right. So we've done 21 of those. It's been a great learning experience for the business. And on the right-hand side, you can see we track. We've got orange and reds. The orange are mitigants we have in place we're happy with, but they haven't been audited. And the reds are improvements. And the easy way to think of it is, if you've got a marked yellow line on a terminal, so you're told to walk within the yellow lines, that's a pretty soft control. And if you've got a car driving around, you probably want a pipe barrier fence. But if you've got a straddle driving around, you probably want a concrete, you know, effectively a concrete, a concrete barrier there as a protection. So the reds are typically the pipe fence or the concrete barrier. And they'll get, you know, put to the board, approved, and spend the capex, and then they'll effectively get improved. So a big piece of work that we're doing. And next time we come and talk to you, we'd hope to see a whole lot of those turned to green, because that's when an independent audit comes in and says that pipe fence is effective and that control, not on paper, is good. It's actually effective out in the field. So that's the process we're going through. A lot of companies in New Zealand have started on this, and it's really important for us as a business. Okay? If the board's supported us with a $500,000 investment in a new rostering system, it's very cool. Came on stream in May. It's real-time tracking of rosters. It's got a really cool app that enables our team. We haven't rolled the app out, but we've got Time Target to be able to look at their roster. It allows us to put rules inside the rostering system, things like maximum overtime hours work, breaks, stand-down periods, so that no one makes a mistake when they're doing a hand-based roster or a paper-based roster. And it looks at patterns, it can look at patterns over weeks or months, not just the day that's coming up tomorrow. So we think it's a great tool for us to manage the business going forward. So it's a big focus for us at the moment. And the idea is you get down to individual staff members and looking after them. So pleased with where that's at, and we'll only get better at this. This is one of the big achievements. We're really proud of this as a business. We put $750,000 into an ITS system that tracks all our straddles, tracks all our drivers. And when we started it up, you can see there that we were getting 300. These are red alert tips, which is warning, 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 you're going to tip up your machine. And we've worked with our team to get it down to the levels you can see there. We haven't had a week with zero, we've had a week with one. So we're waiting to get a week with one, and we'll stop the business and we'll have a barbecue and celebrate. We've got Matt there on the right-hand side. He's driven for over 6 months without a tip alert. We've got end of every quarter, we get staff that have driven for the quarter without a tip alert. So it's about 20 of those getting a reward this week. So it's really cool. So it just means that we've got another intervention and we can keep tracking. So if someone is just getting a wee bit out of sync with their driving, it'll tell us in real time. So then we can get them down, have a chat, look at what the issue is, and you know, if there's retraining required, we can get in and do that. So great tool for us to have. Here's the open day we had during the year that some of you attended. That was a great day, but miserable weather, but it was fantastic. You can see the new wharf there down the left-hand side. It's got containers on it, but it's capable and it's used for our big cruise vessels. So we're a multi task port, so sometimes we're doing containers, sometimes we're doing crews, so we have to be flexible. But it's a great asset to have, 431 metres, and it's you don't get much for 23 mil. That was 135 metres to extend, so it's 23 mil, so it's chunky. But it's great to have it. We wouldn't have got the growth we've got in crews without it. Rio, talked a little bit about the Rio. There it is, 73,000 tonnes, 5,600 containers on it. The white ones that you can see there are the refrigerated containers. They're the ones that are plugged in making the noise. And down on the left-hand corner is the two massive big generators that are plugged in, generating the power to keep them chilled. And when we're last port of call at Port Chalmers, so we've got a lot of those containers that require power, 13 megawatts. And effectively, typically we'll have one or two of those generators running, which effectively goes out through through the funnel you can see there next to it. And you can see the dots, how far that sound has been travelling, which has been as Waverley through to Harrington Point. I had a lady in Sandfly Bay doing this too, so it's amazing how it travels. The good thing is we're making a bit of progress. So we've worked with Marshall Day throughout to get the best location for it to be berthed, and that's the multi-purpose wharf is the best place for it. We moved it from Sunday night in port to Monday night. It's only allowed to be in port one night. That was to look after our neighbours, give them a free weekend and disrupt them on Monday night. And last month I was in Hamburg and Copenhagen with Maersk, had a great face-to-face conversation with them. They're committed to solving it at source. They've got a solution. It's gone from a series of options to a confirmed solution. And we're expecting later this month or next month they're going to give us the timetable and we'll be able to announce that to our neighbours. So a lot of work going on, but I think there is an outcome that will be a good one for our neighbourhood. Harbourside, we've been working with the Harbourside team and we've had our celebration with the 150 years of the university and our support of that that relationship, the same sort of age as the port. And that left-hand side where you can see the orange barriers up is being gifted to the university. And we're just working through the final throes of getting that re-decked so it can be open to the public for this summer's fishing, which will be great until the university decide to do what they're going to do in due course, which is hopefully something like that, but you never know. So we're supporting the PGF application, which has been in for a while, and we're being told we might hear something later this month. So we wait. So being a good neighbour in how we operate with our social licence in the port, the Noise and Environment Committee has been a really key piece of this. The team there has done a good job interfacing with the community on our behalf. The Rio noise has been topical, so they've had to do a lot of work. As part of the 2GP, we offered to have an independent chair appointed, so we've appointed a local, Mark Cameron, who lives just above the port. And he's had two meetings now in charge, which is great. And as Dave touched on, the Boiler Point Fishing Wharf has been frustrating, but we're getting there, and it's been built, and it will be put in place. So, we're just waiting for that to come down. And then the really cool thing that we've been working on, you hear a lot of things about this machine learning and AI. So we've got a couple of young, smart IT people, and they've been working with Microsoft. And we used to have a guy who would listen to these noises, these real-time noises that would get logged, and he'd put his headphones on and have to listen to every WAV file and say, it's a dog, or it's a chainsaw, or it's a shotgun going off, or it's a train, or it's a 40 dropping on a 40. And we've taught this machine to actually do all that, and it's getting 95% of them right. So Microsoft are pretty happy about it, so because it's trying to find a use for this sort of technology is pretty cool. So now we don't have anyone sitting there listening to all these noises. It's just automatically listened to by a computer effectively, and they work out what it is and then log it in our database so we know that was a dog. So it's great. It's a real cool technology. We look forward to using a bit more. Geez, the weather's been kind to us. We've had 2 days only through winter where this project's had to stop. So this is a stabilisation of Flagstaff Hill, which has been on the cards about 10 years after a weather event. So it's a significant project. You can see the benching that they've done at the top of the hill there, and then it's effectively a slope coming down. They're using some fantastic new technology with a drone and laser, so you don't have surveyors up on that face trying to work out whether it's the right angle. It's all done electronically through the laser and the drone, and it gets fed into the operator's machine, so he can't dig down any deeper than the drone is given in the profile. So when you see it, it nearly looks bang on straight. It's amazing technology. So Fulton Hogan have done a first-class job there. We haven't had a single complaint from the community with over 2,000 trucks going through the town. So no health and safety events, so we've been very pleased with this project. In the weekend, there'll probably be some press. We're getting helicopters in to sluice the face, because it's been so dry, having to hire helicopters. So they're coming in with monsoon buckets to just wet the face and get any loose items off it. So we're getting close to the end. So we're expecting it to be done by the end of the month, which will be brilliant because we can relay that road pre-cruise season and give the locals back 2 lanes, the footpath back, and the railway line will be within the port's boundary. So a significant improvement in safety and good for our community.
Did you ask your question? You're going to batter that back all the way down with covenant blocks or something like that? How's it going to
end up looking?
It goes
all the way. No, that slope goes all the way to the footpath.
Yep.
And then there's a catch fence. And we're going to spray it with effectively that spray on grass. And then in the autumn, we're going to landscape it with proper natives. So that's all in the plan. So very pleased with how that's going. Tarone Beach. We're still working through the consenting documentation to provide to yourselves. We're close on that, so we'd expect in the next couple of months to be lobbing in a consent, and we look forward to your support because it's a great project.
Thank you.
And I don't know if you've seen a few containers, but we've been supporting schools around the peninsula and West Harbourside with containers. It's going down really well. So that's just a nice, easy way we can support our schools, which is important to us. And there's a raft of community groups we support. You know, obviously, you've heard about the Wildlife Hospital and the Maritime Museum, which are pretty critical to us. But we have the HALO team. They live with us. And obviously, there's a few others in there that we support, so it's important. So, Chalmers Properties, Dave.
Right, Chalmers Properties. As we have alluded to, it's the Tarapa development is getting close to being finished, and good EBIT for the whole business has been derived from the property rentals, which we have in Auckland, down here in Dunedin, and now some in Hamilton, as well as land sales in Hamilton and Dunedin. Revaluation, we've talked about it, $22 million. And the main project we've got underway at the moment is the construction of two warehouses in Oak Road and Wiri. So this is on probably some of the most expensive industrial land in New Zealand that we happen to own. We've got two warehouses. We're building on that, and we're just starting. We've very likely got one of them filled already with a very long-term tenant, which has really only just happened in the last day or so. But there's $18 million being spent there on these two warehouses. And just the other thing is the leasehold land sales in Dunedin. You know, we've been criticised for many years for not selling the land and ground leases in Dunedin. We've got some fairly strict criteria about who we will sell to. First of all, it has to be the current leaseholder. Secondly, they are planned development. And so they would come in with plans they want to do, but to do so they would like to have it freeholded. Other thing is there is some land there that we won't sell that we do possibly need for future development. So there's 10 criteria in all, but those are the main ones. And, yeah, we're not encouraging it, but when people feel as though that they're into that situation, they come and talk to us, and we either negotiate a price or whatever. So that's a bit of a change. But just the Chalmers Properties portfolio, that's split there. If we look into the future, Auckland's likely to grow, particularly when you add in the rental of these two units we're building up there. So that'll grow with the asset value there. Dunedin probably will just continue to decrease slightly, both on the growth up in Auckland and in Hamilton. And also perhaps get moving out of some of these leasehold lands in Dunedin. But I think, you know, having the area split, that's good, diverse business. Not many years before that we were 100% Dunedin. So, you know, I think it's just, you know, the Christchurch earthquake, I think, taught all land developers to actually geographically diversify their investments. You never know what's around the corner. Just going on to Tarapa. For those of you that have been up there, it's a much changed scene now. The land development is virtually complete, and the sales of sections for the last financial year was $22.7 million. We've got under construction at the moment two warehouses, and one of those is for a company that signed up for a long-term lease. And we've also got another six units. So these are just small units that are in a block. Basically a warehouse or something downstairs and perhaps a small office upstairs. And the first six we built got snapped up pretty quickly in leases, and so we're just building another six of those. So that's going to chew up a few dollars for us as well. But it really is becoming a busy park now. You go in there now, there's a lot of businesses established, and it's filling up pretty quickly. So if we just look at the Tarapa Gateway development timeline, we've just got there the various stages. Probably look at the total land. So there's the total land we had available was 60 hectares. Some of that gets taken up in roads and in swales and stormwater disposal areas. There's 45 hectares to be developed. We've sold 68%, so 14 hectares left to sell. And the bottom line there, sort of the cost to date, 65, and we've sold 64, and we've sold $65 million worth. So we're actually at the happy stage now where we're cash positive. And that's quite a milestone in land development when you get to that stage. It just shows there the orange ones, obviously, or the pink ones are the sold ones. A couple of interesting sales there, and the sort of the right hand corner. Go over to the
over here.
Where are you looking?
Oh, this one.
Oh, there. Sorry.
It's easier this one.
Yeah. This area here is interesting. Is that that's been the bulk of that's been sold to Hamilton City as a park and ride for the Auckland Hamilton Rail service that the government have just funded in the last couple of weeks. So the rail track's right next to all that. Yeah. That's where the station, main
it
station.
It just goes along there. And if you've been there, the base sits over here. So the railway line goes straight up through Tasman Road up here.
Yep.
It's fantastic.
And then over in the other corner, there was quite a big development there for the dairy goat industry.
Which is in here.
Which has been, that's basically a drying plant for goat milk. And that's taken quite a big chunk of that. The only areas we've got left to develop are the top, those ones. So you can see the bulk of it really has been done. And those are pretty prime sites because they've got very good frontage onto our very busy roads. So there'll be a special development going there, and we may even own something there that we'll continue to lease. So the other bits that have been sold, the 78, 79, we're in discussions with a business there that's keen for us to do a development to lease, and I'm sure these other ones they'll be going in the near future also. So that's Chalmers Properties, and just the outlook. I think Kevin's referred to a bit the uncertainty around world trade, and I think what the summary of it is that it may be slightly reduced volumes, but there'll be a lot of different routes. You know, the Chinese-American route, which was a very, very big one in the past, is probably diminishing somewhat. But some of the vessels will be heading maybe out of China and out of America in different directions than they used to go. But we can't do much to control that, unfortunately. Logs will probably slow down a bit as China slows down also. We have been, I think we said that a little bit last year as well, but I think we're in for a bit of a slowdown there. Chalmers Properties, we're very well placed there with a sort of a mixture of portfolio, and as well as those last properties we've got to sell at Te Rapa. I think the outlook for Chalmers Properties continues to be very, very good. So, Mr. Chairman, that's all we've got to say at this stage.
Thank you very much for your comprehensive overview. Questions, Councillor Hope?
Through the chair, I've just got a couple of staffing questions, if I may ask you, Mr. Winners. And how many men work at Port Otago as opposed to ladies? Because it probably is quite a good swag, is it?
Well, I thought you might ask that. Yeah.
Sorry.
see what you're trying. How about that? So we're still largely skewed towards male workforce.
That's right.
Which has been the traditional. Yeah. The lashing role on a ship is physical work, so
yep.
It's hard work.
Yeah.
And there's not too many of the females that have been able to cope with that. We've got a number that have, and they're going very well. Amy on the front cover is one of our stars. She's a new recruit. She's driving straddles, does everything. She's amazing. So we're trying to obviously employ more, and we're working on that.
My question, I want to know that, and then the second thing I wanted to know is you do really great things for the community. You showed us your containers, and you do that, the breakfast. So would you look at doing something for your men, prostate-wise? I'm sorry to get personal, but I just think you're a great company. You obviously care about your staff. I've been talking to your financial controller, and I think it's an amazing thing, and you're obviously very, very passionate about looking after your staff. There's a huge number of men that work there.
Big program we've got that's on the cards this year is our wellness program for our team. So it does pick up on that. And our guys have been into Steptember. Our team won that,
yep.
Which is very cool. Yep. And, we have had the prostate week as well. So, but as part of the wellness, we've got a wee bit of work to do there to improve what we do.
Councillor Lawton.
Thank you for coming along. Just a couple of questions in terms of the broader being a good neighbour. ORC have been working on their pest plan over the last 2 years, and one of the points that keeps coming up is a marine pathway, and I wanted to know whether or not you have cleaning facilities at the port for particularly the big ships. I'm assuming it's their responsibility to ensure that their boats are clean as they head round New Zealand, in particular into Fiordland. But I was wondering if there's anything that, as a port, we can do to help ensure the safety of our marine environment.
Right, OK. I'll deal with this one.
Yeah.
It's a Maritime New Zealand function. So they're our regulator that set the standards for when the rules around entering into New Zealand waters and the anti-fouling and cleaning regimes required. So it's first port of call, that's an inspection by currently MPI, which sometimes is us. So we have facilities to enable MPI to do that. Port Otago doesn't do it ourselves. It's the regulator that does that. So I think New Zealand's got a lot to learn in this space. So the Australians are considerably smarter at this than New Zealand. I think our Maritime New Zealand team are taking that on board. And from the meetings we've had with them, they're looking to change. So I think we'll only see that improve.
It's good to hear that you're having the conversations. It sounds as well, I would hope that we are actually going to improve. So is there anything that we can actually do to be proactive in that space?
Well, I think I've got an ultimate obligation to keep everyone in the port safe. So whether they're our people or the people who just come and go on the port. So what we do is make sure that when they're undertaking the work, they're doing it really safely. So that's a focus for our team and for me. But as far as getting in there and doing the work for them and imposing standards on ships, that's just something Port Otago, it's not our role to play.
Councillor Scott. No, thank you. I want to build upon your outlook slide. But before I do that, just acknowledge that, hey, there's a lot of good news in here, so... Thank you, Kevin, and a big thank you to Dave. I understand this, as the Chair said, is your last visit here, so, you know, a big thank you. But just building on that outlook slide, you talk about, like, logs falling off, this type of thing. You've previously mentioned the issues with ships in terms of a net.
The networks.
Well, the fact that they're not earning a lot of money on a net basis, I think, is basically what you said. And I'm also particularly interested in terms of the learnings, what's happening with other ports. How do we compare with other ports? And that's something that we've had in previous presentations, you know, like how are we tracking with earnings, dividends, like compared to Tauranga or whatever, or even internationally? Because, you know, looking forward for the next 10 years, what are the issues and how are we performing in comparison to our competitors and our neighbours?
Well, certainly within, we do as a board look at our comparisons against the other ports around New Zealand. It is quite hard to do that because, you know, you've got the Auckland, the Tauranga's and the Christchurch's and even Napier now as the big ones who have got far more regular visits than perhaps we have. And it's after that, there's, you know, we don't really compare with Nelson either, which is sort of the next one off the rank. Like, so it is difficult, but we do try to get those numbers.
Are we the number one port or are we the number five port?
In some factors, we'd say we're number one, and some in others we're number five, and
I'd,
it's a blend.
I'd be interested to know a bit more about that sometime, because it's easy to just look in a bubble and say today everything's sweet, but what's it, you know, what's the projection for the next 10 years? This is what I'm interested in.
There's a Deloitte report done annually, which compares all the ports.
Okay,
it's just come out. I can send it through.
I think that would be a really good
PDF, please. It's a good read.
Send it to Liz and we'll circulate it to everyone, please, Kevin.
It's on the internet, Brian. You can just Google it.
Yeah. It's a good report, good reference document. I carry
Liz
it around.
Circulate it.
Thank you.
Councillor Noon.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Kevin, I just had a question around the deepening of the channel in the upper harbour. Just understanding what impact will that have on the split of loading logs at port versus Dunedin at 70-30 split at the moment. So what sort of happens going forward once that dredging work's completed?
Well, at the moment we're just getting down to 8.5 metres, which is our consented level, and we've been there in previous years a long time ago. There's probably been very little dredging in the upper harbour for 10 years because the focus has been on the next generation and preparing the channel for 14 metres or 14.5 metres and ultimately 15 if we require it. So our dredging plant's been focused on the capital dredging program, which has now come to an end. So we've been back in there cleaning up at 8.5, and we can widen. We're consented to widen, so we'll do some safety improvements and widen the channel. And then we've got the work going on to consider whether we should go down to 10.5, because effectively you can take a 200-metre Supermax logship that you'll get 38,000 tonnes on board, and they'll need about 10.5 metres draft. So in theory, you could load it up 100% at Dunedin Bulk Port. Because at the moment, we can only put a half load on in Dunedin, so you get about 18,000 jazz or tonnes under deck, and then it'll either go to Timaru as a second port call or go to Port Chalmers and top up alongside a beach street, and then we'll put 20,000 tonnes on the deck, 38,000 tonnes, and because we've got 14 metres of draft there. So we're constrained by effectively the depth to take bigger ships up into town. But it's not just the log ships. If you've ever seen the fuel tankers coming in, they look like they're well out of the water. They're miles out of the water because we just can't load them up without that draft. So we'd get the fuel companies would be very happy with us if we could give them some more depth to enable them to bring in tankers heavier. It reduces the frequency, but it's better for them in the long term. So some work going on there. But we haven't been down to 10.5 metres. So we're doing geotech work because you could find a granite rock in the middle of the harbour, you know, a metre down under where we are, and it just means you can't go any deeper. So we're getting that work done just to see if we can pull the business case together and it will work. We don't know that yet. We're just working our way through that. Hope to be in a position by Christmas.
Just a follow-up question, Mr Chair. The Otago Yacht Club, they obviously... Well, do they benefit in any way, shape or form with taking the depth of the channel down to the permitted level at 8.5? Because they have... I don't know whether they've come along here, but they've certainly lobbied some of us around the table about their issues in and around their space.
America's Cup defence, is that what you're saying?
No, we've helped out the Otago Yacht Club. They're a good bunch of people. They've done the dredging within the basin there. And I think there's a spot out in front of them that's just sort of on the corner of the channel that we'll clean up for them as well. But I think they will get some benefit out of our 8.5 metres. Because the Leith, you know, that's the runoff from the Leith. So it's not the natural movement, it's effectively what we're pulling out of the river. So that just goes straight down into that basin, and that's what we're having to have that continual maintenance. So that's what we're working on at the moment.
Thank you.
Councillor Laws.
I just wanted to ask a little bit around the just the big financial picture. You've made an after-tax profit of $49 million. You've paid down your debt. You've improved your shareholder equity to over $400-500 million. You've almost completed, you say, your next generation, which I imagine was your big capital investment. So it seems to me you've sort of reached a stasis point. You've reached a point of where do we go now? You know, you've got to that big strategic. Have you had any views about where you go now?
I think we've just talked about one of the options that we're looking at is this deepening that the upper harbour to that 10.5 metres. So our next board meeting is...
I think revenue generation.
Yeah, well, that will generate a bit more revenue too. But the other revenue generator is building the leasehold properties we have in Chalmers properties. You know, that's converting the one-off intake of selling land and getting a long-term lease in front of us. So that's the other way that we've been using the capital.
But you've made your profit in the last 10 years, what, primarily from Chambers property. That's been your big asset generator, isn't it?
It's been the big cash generator. We've reinvested in it, and that's we've had good ongoing returns out of that, and that has allowed us to do the things that like the new generation. A port alone is very hard to, you know, to cater for these big expenditures. Napier Port, a very good example, where you really do struggle to generate enough capital to spend $80 million or whatever it is that they're doing up there on wharves. They had to sell half it to actually raise that. We are in the happy position of being able to retain the ownership and fund the ongoing development of both our land activity plus our port activity.
Which is why I'm interested also in your other stat, which was Chambers. You said that it cost you $64 million to develop Hamilton, Te Rapa. You've now got revenue of $65 million.
We've achieved $65 million to date, yes.
To date, that's correct. What's your future revenue projections for Te Rapa?
Well, we'll receive the rest of that, how much 40, it comes?
14 hectares.
14 hectares times.
Over the next number of years. Yeah. And the sales price that we get.
It's another 50, isn't it?
Just depending on where the market is.
Another 40 million.
It's another 40 million
yep.
you expect out of that. And where will that money go? Does it go back into the group, or you're intending to invest that in Wiri or other land development?
Well, things like Wiri, that development, things like those other buildings we're doing in Hamilton. So that takes up a good chunk of that.
So do you see Chambers as distinct from, does it look after itself?
Yes.
So the money that you generate out of that doesn't really come back into the group per se. It tends to develop Chambers further.
Over the years, there's probably a bit of money come back out of Chambers into the port. But we generally try and run them as two standalone businesses.
That's the question.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Councillor Deakin.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to say, particularly to Dave Faulkner, a huge thank you for your role on the board and your brilliant leadership of the board in recent years. I'm going to miss you intensely. I also wanted to say that it was good to hear you acknowledge the success of our role as your owners and shareholders in appointing the best directors we can find and in enabling the company to always have enough cash to do what it is that's required to keep on improving, keep on building, keep on investing. Because that has been our position, and I'm glad to hear you say that we've been doing okay in that respect. And I'm very pleased to hear that, and I hope that long continues. I'd hate to see the day when a council came along around this table that was money hungry, wanted to use the huge asset we've got in Port Otago Limited for other purposes. That would be, I think, disastrous for the company and for Otago. Mr. Chairman, there wasn't a question there. It was a statement that I wanted to make. There was just one little question that's nagging in the back of my mind, though, that whoever arrives around this table shortly is going to be probably, I hope, enthusiastic about the idea of mitigating this council's emission profile, doing everything we can to stop contributing to greenhouse gases. And already that could mean conversations about the future of public transport in Dunedin and phasing out as fast as practical diesel buses on anything but the steepest hill routes, very likely. But the other thing, of course, that a lot of people will want to do is to look at the port and say, how do we stop all that emissions going on from that huge number of ship visits coming into our port all the time and pumping rubbish into the air? Have you got any thoughts about that, Kevin or Dave? Have you had a yarn to Maersk about what they can do to mitigate, stop, scrub, whatever it is they can do? Noise is one thing.
Okay.
But greenhouse gases is a huge issue. Okay. We've got to do far more than we are doing. What's the port going to do?
I'd like to come back to your first comments because I added a little bit to there, but I think finish with your second ones. First of all, I think you probably will realise that the MARPOL regulations are coming in on the 1st of January. So that means that all the ship fuels around the world has got to be using low sulphur emission fuel. New Zealand is one of the few countries that have never signed up to it. But because all the ships coming from overseas, those arriving from January on will be with this low sulphur fuel. That's a huge challenge to the shipping industry because it's a hell of a lot more expensive. And, what was the Maersk figure? A couple of billion a year?
Yeah, Maersk have got $2 billion worth of additional costs they have to pass on to their customers.
$2 billion.
Yeah. So that's certainly, catering from that extent, and again, that's an international requirement, and we can't take any claim for that.
Does that apply to cruise ships as well, Dave?
Yes. So, you know, it's basically for worldwide shipping, but as I say, for whatever reason, New Zealand is one of the two countries, I think, that's never
Mexico
signed
Mexico and New Zealand, I think.
Yeah, which is interesting. But anyway, we'll leave that aside. In terms of the harbour or the port itself, we are undertaking to manage our carbon emissions in a very minor way. We're just buying two new cars. They're hybrids. And this is to take pilots backwards and forwards over to Fiordland. So that is a very small start, but it's very much on our agenda going forward. Is there anything else you want to add on that?
Yeah, well, I think if you think of diesel, most of our straddles are diesel electric or diesel. So when I went up to see the MERS team, I went and saw Knoll, who is in Germany, and they produce, the world's best hybrid straddle. So I went to see those, and they're impressive machines. They're 30% less emissions, 30% less fuel. So they look a very, very viable option. And I see Tauranga just announced last week that they've got one, a Kalmar equivalent, and they're circa $300,000 a machine, more expensive than a diesel, but they're the logical piece of kit we'll buy next. So we'll look forward to seeing the hybrids coming to our fleet, which will be great. But if we're really trying to lower emissions, the deepening the harbour project would enable us to take all those trucks off the road, because effectively the log trucks and the container trucks currently go on State Highway 88 down to the port. They'd be going into the Dunedin port and they wouldn't be on the road, which would be a significant saving in getting trucks off the road, let alone the safety benefits to the West Harbour community. So that's a real positive outcome if we can get this project across the line.
Well, if I could just go back to your first comment, and again, I congratulate the Regional Council for their policy and the way that they have set up Port Otago for the last 30 years. When you look back, and I dug out the figures when Jeff Plunkett retired, and the average tenure of a director is something like 13 years. I've been a bit of a one-night stand because I've only been here for 10. But, it just shows the selection policies have stood. And all of those directors have contributed to the growth we've talked about, et cetera. So, again, I think congratulations to ORC for adopting that policy and commended it well into the future.
Councillor Woodhead.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good report, gentlemen. Strong report from a financial perspective and comprehensive. Good to see Tarapa's. We've had some challenges. We've been waiting a while. Good to see it's hit the equilibrium and the rest of it's going to be profit. And there'll be other opportunities with some of their Chana's other land as future development opportunities too. There's a chunk in Auckland. It's the next stage. But there's a significant milestone here I think we need to acknowledge. A couple of councillors have already. Virtually the completion of Next Generation. A large chunk of capital investment over quite a few years, which at the end of it, and Mr. Faulkner's been very clear, the ports will need ongoing capital investment. This is not the end of, you can't just put the chequebook away. But currently our infrastructure's in very, very good condition. And that's significant. And I keep an eye on other ports around the country and some of the challenges they have, and we're in a pretty good space there as Port Otago. And that doesn't happen overnight. That is a result of good planning, good management, and some strategies in place, and a few risks taken at times. The Tarapa developments are obviously in a very good space. The proactive stance you've taken with dealing with the noise issue. Hopefully we get to a conclusion of that. And if Maersk drive those solutions through with the mufflers or whatever they are, then Port Otago needs a good pat on the back for the leadership they've shown on the way through there. But what I really want to say is just a big thank you to Dave Faulkner. And he's reminded us of the processes, policies, the structure we've got in place, but the success of this business hasn't occurred overnight. It's been a result of good management and good governance for 30-odd years, and Dave's only been part of it for the last 10, but his practical input as a director, as someone who's come out of management in a large business, in this case Fulton Hogan, has a significant part to play in the success, and it's not just Dave, it's the director team and the management team. So I just want to acknowledge that, and for a one-night stand, you're not a bad one. So.
Sorry about that statement.
Well, you said it.
Oh, that's the quote of the year.
And I was one of the four or five that sat down and interviewed Dave and rang him up about half an hour later and said yes. He was just talking to his family, actually, downtown having breakfast. He said, whoa, hang on a minute. And it's, you know, you can retire with a lot of pride, and we wish you all the very best. There'll be another opportunity, hopefully, for a representative of council to say a few words, but it won't be in this public forum around this table. It'll be something that the board will, I'm sure, acknowledge at Dave's retirement closer to Christmas. But on behalf of council, on behalf of the people of Otago, thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
One final question from Councillor Kempton.
Yes, thanks very much. It's not a question. It's slightly valedictorian, if that's a word. Great. If it isn't, I just invented it. But in any event, last time I'll get to sit here with Port Otago representatives in the room, I echo wholeheartedly the comments that have been made with respect to your leadership, Dave. Thank you for that. Just going back to some of the things we saw there, one of the things that some councillors might or might not be aware of is the huge steps that have been taken in health and safety over 10 years at the port, and the focusing on the critical risks and the bow ties and so on is current best practice. And very much that focus on culture and capability, as opposed to saying to people, you've got to prevent accidents, because that doesn't prevent anything. That is leading edge stuff, so-called safety too in the business. So thank you very much for that, but it has come an extraordinarily long way, and we can take some comfort from that. Another point that I wanted to make in the 10 years that I've been around this table is that something that doesn't always happen in council trading organisations is that governance does listen really, really well to the shareholder. That's happened here, and a part of that will be the efforts of the Port Liaison Committee and joining the two together. But one of the things that we did, and it's by my mind debatable in any event, is we said that port dividends will go into will go to cover operating expenses, right? What otherwise would be rates. What that's meant is that we have absolutely required consistent returns from this company, and consistent returns are actually, in any company, quite hard to provide. And we've done it. You people have done that. And so we could rely every year on the company being able to comfortably provide the level of dividend that we required in our statement of intent. And I think that that has been a real milestone for us. We need to keep that in mind as we go forward. When you think about it, 10.5% on equity is a whole lot better than the Post Office Savings Bank and significantly better than what we get off our managed funds, right? That's the best investment we have in terms of return on equity. And on top of that, of course, 11.5% compound growth in assets over 30 years, don't forget that either. We could debate whether we want less growth and more returns or the other way around, but at least we're in a position where that debate might be possible. And so that's excellent from my point of view. So this organisation is something of the jewel in the crown, and we shouldn't forget that, and I hope that that's impressed upon the new council. But thank you again.
Thank you. Oh, well, thank you very much. Sorry, Steve.
Yeah,
sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, because it'll be my last opportunity too to speak to the Board of Port Otago in the capacity as councillor. So, yes, congratulations, Dave, on your tenure as chairperson. You had a hard act to follow in John Gilkes, who was an extremely successful chairperson. But the plus side of that, of course, is that you took over an organisation that was in very good heart and going in a good direction. It would have been interesting to know where we would be today had it not been for the Christchurch earthquake, because we were heading in a certain direction, and that changed everything, of course. And out of all that, you made a fist out of
out of what we ended up with. So well done, and congratulations for, and congratulations on a very good year result.
Okay, finally, as Chairman, thank you very much for the presentation today. I don't know if you've got any final words to add.
I'd just like to thank the council for firstly appointing me, and it was a pretty quick thing, Stephen. I was actually still working at Fulton Hogg. I was on my farewell tour at the time when I was happened to be down there, and so it was a great opportunity. And you know, as you come out of when you're working in a business like Fulton Hogg, and you're just totally focused on that, and going out to become a director of a number of companies, it really opens your eyes a wee bit. And to actually go into the port business, it's a hell of an interesting business. And I've enjoyed it greatly, and it'll be really sad in December to be walking out the door, but I'll still have marine traffic to keep an eye on on the vessels going backwards and forwards. But as I say, just thank you to the council for giving me the opportunity, and hopefully I've left Port Otago in as good, if not better, position than it was when I came on board. And just go back to your comments about the earthquake. Even without the earthquake, I don't think it would have happened.
No.
We were very close to pulling the pin on those discussions, and the earthquake solved us making a decision.
Okay, well, thank you to you all. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, do you want to move a recommendation that we receive the Port Otago annual report?
Thank you. Seconded by Councillor Kempton. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Right.
Provided a good out, though.
What?
It provided a good out.
He used to be the council's auditor.
It's not your...
Right. Cool. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right.
Okay, we'll move on. Next is item 8, confirmation of the minutes of the previous meeting. Moved by Councillor Noon, seconded by Councillor Neal. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there any matters arising from those minutes? Very good. We'll move on to the main bulk of the agenda. There's no actions. Where are we? The first is a governance report. Payments summarised and payment schedule there. Mr. Donnelly, anything to report there?
No, it's
straightforward.
It's just procedural.
Yep.
It's the only item.
Seconded by Councillor Robertson. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. The second paper, annual return of an act of subsidiaries 2019. And this report is a good summary of what it all means. Pretty clear, I think. Nothing to add, Mr. Donnelly?
No, again, it's procedural. Council is the shareholder, even though those are inactive and have no assets or anything, but we need to go through the process to have the resolution every year.
Happy to move the recommendations, Mr. Chairman.
I'll second that. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carry. Next one is another governance report concerning the assets of the Otago Regional Council in their various forms. Mr. Donnelly.
So this paper here is back when we signed off the annual plan. The question was raised, just it would be good to get a bit more information and background around the reserves that council has got. So this is bringing that back now. It ties back to these numbers are out of our annual report, which will be coming to Audit and Risk next week and then to council the following week for adoption. And it basically just outlines what we see in the balance sheet for council, which is the public equity, which is quite a big number. We've got $680 million there. In the executive summary there, that point two just got pointed out to me. In brackets, we've got what the number was last year. Where it says 2019, it should say 2018. But public equity then, what we're trying to show is what that's broken up, what it's made up of, and then tie that back to what council actually has in cash assets, because a big portion of the public equity and the reserves that council holds are actually non-cash. And that comes back to how they first came into council's ownership, which when they were vested at the setup of the regional council. As Dave Faulkner just pointed out, the original amount vested in the port shares was 20 million, and that's grown over the 30 years to the number that we now have, which has just gone up to 534 million. But all of that obviously is a non-cash gain. So the bulk of the public equity is like that. Other things that were vested in back when the council was set up, obviously there was property, there was various assets. Later, not long after, there was a number of infrastructure assets were all vested to council. So all of those have created the equity in the reserves. So then what we have to do is take them out and tie that back to the amount of cash assets that council has, which is currently, as at the end of June, just under 40 million. So the rest of the report then goes through, basically details the reconciliation of that total equity, public equity number, back to what we've got in cash, and then shows how that's made up. Because even within the cash we've got in the cash reserves, we in fact have some that are in deficit where other reserves have funded borrowing to various schemes, and then we end up with the mix that we have. Ultimately, after all of those dedicated reserves that we have, we end up with a portion of general public equity, which is effectively our general reserve that's available in cash for, you know, council to use at its discretion.
Any comment, Councillor Lords?
A question, actually. Can I take you to the last table, number 15, breakdown targeted rate? It's just a question about how it works. Should know this, but I don't, so you'll tell me. If I can take you to Leith Flood, in brackets, so the 14.6 is the amount of money you've borrowed to make that money, that project happen, is that correct?
Yes.
And what you'll continue to do is rate whoever's affected by that Leith rate to get that money back into the ORC coffers, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The plan is that that'll occur over the next 15 to 20 years.
Over the next 15 to 20 years.
Oh, it's happening already, but it just smooths the rate. Rather than having to come up with $15 million in one hit, you rate that over a period of time.
And then if I can take you back now to the number 10, funded reserves. So that's the bottom of page 14. There you are. And you just said, but our total cash assets are $40 million. And it says there 29.8. I'm trying to reconcile those two. You'll tell me how that is.
So, there's those dedicated reserves, which that means that the cash needs to be available for those purposes. So, for example, Kurawayo is where we've freeholded Kurawayo land, we've received the cash, that is held in, it's part of all of our cash reserves, but it's dedicated for that purpose, and the funds, the return that comes off that is used to fund some activity down in South Otago. So effectively, that $6.5 million is dedicated to that particular purpose. So the current amount that's held there in the funded reserves is just under $30 million. If you go to the next table, you can see that actually outlines what we've got in cash assets. So the total amount that we have in cash funds available is $38 million, $37,934.
Yep.
So then what you have to do is minus off the $29,885, which is those funded reserves,
yep,
and the remainder is $8 million. Yep.
So I add the $8 million to your 29.8, essentially.
Yep, and you get the $37.9 million, which is what is currently in, you know, cash, term deposits, and the managed fund. Yep.
Councillor Woodhead.
Thank you for this report and good discussion already. This is something that Mr. Donnelly, you're going to have to spend some time to, and those councillors that get re-elected, explain to the new council so they understand it all. I was particularly interested in having the awareness of Table 15 so that we actually understand that, you know, for example, the Leith is $14.5 million in deficit. The West Torrey drainage is the best part of $2 million in deficit as a result of paying for some new pumps a number of years ago, but also a flood that required a significant amount of expenditure about 2-odd years ago. So, you know, we, as an organisation, we do a pretty good job of managing, because we're borrowing internally to fund this work. We're not borrowing externally, we're borrowing internally, which benefits both the targeted ratepayers and... because it's a slightly cheaper rate than we can get commercially, but also the organisation as a whole, because we actually earn a bit more in interest than you would earn commercially also. But there's a lot of detail here on how all our funding policies and reserves bolt together, and it takes a bit to understand. So good report, thank you. And it's good to see... all that information out in the open. Got no questions, Councillor, Mr. Chairman.
Councillor Scott.
Yeah, so, Nick, just following on from your comment, so in terms of effectively liquid reserve that's potentially available for a bright idea, whether it was biodiversity or whatever it is, the number is basically 8 million. Yeah, in terms of theoretically liquid reserves that are available, bearing in mind that if your bright idea was in the field of water management, there is a bit of reserve there, or emergency response, or if it was Kirrawao in South Otago, there's potentially other reserves there as well, if it was aligned to the policy of those particular allocations. Am I interpreting that correct?
Well, no, it's probably more if you went to the paragraph 13, the table there.
Yeah.
The 8 million is the public equity, which is like the general portion. You've then got targeted rates. So the targeted rate schemes overall have surpluses that, you know, they belong to those particular schemes as well. Okay. So they're almost like the same as the funded reserves. So you have to realise they the use of those is dedicated to those schemes.
Okay.
So in fact, the general reserve cash portion is 3 million. It's 2956.
Yeah.
But I would point out that's what's available in cash right now.
Yeah.
It would be a bigger number if you added back, and then if you go to the paragraph 14 in the table, then that is net of what has been lent to all of those schemes that are in deficit.
Yeah.
And if you added that back, then there's almost 20 million. But that would then depend on
if they could pay it back,
or, you know, there's options available whether at some point if the council wanted to get some debt. You could externally debt fund rather than internally,
and
have that money available to use for other purposes.
So the real number's more 20 mil on that basis.
For general reserve, gross of what's already been lent out.
Yeah.
But so there's the point is that all of these numbers, these are the numbers that will be coming through in the annual report, the previous year's numbers. These numbers are in the annual report. This paper's just trying to hopefully reconcile and explain it a bit better so that it's a bit more obvious as to what's actually available to consider for using for various purposes, as opposed to, well, is there actually 600 million available? Because there's not, because that includes a huge amount that's not cash.
Can I ask the obvious question then? We had apropos of our conversation that we had around resources, staff resources mostly, and science resources and consultancy resources required to deal with issues now that Sarah's going to be bringing back to us at our next meeting. we could dip into that money without having to trouble the annual plan. Yes? So as long as we make a policy decision around this table, we currently have cash sitting in a bank somewhere that we could fund additional staffing costs and resources from this financial year without needing to go to the annual plan.
Yes, you could. And Council's done that before with things, but in the short term, but you've got to think of the long term on, you know, are you going to do that forever? Or is that just the short term to get you through to the next year and then you're going to fund it? Because there is the revenue and, you know, financing policy, which dictates how different activity will get funded. So depending on, you know, that science activity and what it relates to, you know, there is a policy in place that that activity should be funded via different rating mechanisms. You know, usually whatever activity it is, sometimes it's targeted rate, sometimes it's general rate, depending on what it is. RPS got mentioned. RPS is a general rate funded activity. So you would expect then that, you know, that in a perfect world, that would revert to being general rate funded. Because that's what the policy says it should be.
Yes, long term, that's right.
Yeah.
But we're talking, this is sort of, the money was found for Wallabies, as I recall, what, 3 years ago? Bang, suddenly came out of nowhere.
Well, that's an example of that. That's what happened. The proposal came up and Council made the decision to fund that. And I think we were talking it was the remainder of a year because the funding ongoing was going to be about, I think it was $270,000 per annum. It was part of that in the current year and that was reserve funded. And then it was rate funded going forward in the next annual plan.
Right.
So that's an example of how Council has done that in the past.
So we don't. So the Chief Executive then, just to clarify, can dip into funds that we currently have without needing to go to the next annual plan to deal with staffing resources now, or the need for staffing resources now. Yes?
Yeah, you would say or it would all come down to, you know, how much you're going to be talking about. Because you've still got the requirement for anything that Council does. You've got the significance and engagement policy where you have to consider what the ongoing impact might be. But if it's not triggering that, yep, Council can, you know, the whole idea of having a Council is that you can make decisions within those parameters and then before you go to get public approval. So that's all there. You know, the first thing that needs to be worked out is what is the actual business case and what's required. And then the things of how it would be funded and when things might actually happen can be considered from there.
It's a yes, is it?
it's a yes.
It's a process, yes.
Exercising some caution because it's not a, you know, it's not a foolproof plan, I guess, in terms of, especially if you're doing it for resources, because they're ongoing costs. They don't disappear the next year.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. Any further comment?
Happy to move the recommendation, Mr. Chairman.
This report be noted. Seconded by Councillor Noon. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Against, carried. I think we adjourn now until 1 o'clock. Is that correct?
And the helicopter.
We will have the helicopter rescue trust. Thank you.